Hello and warm welcome to Center Stage. Good to have you with us. I have the pleasure of standing in for your regular host, Bahadur Bijani, for a couple of weeks. Well, violence continues unabated in Syria in a week when dozens of UN chemical weapons experts are in the Arab country to implement a UN resolution on scrapping the Syrian chemical arsenal. Multiple bomb blasts rocked the Syrian capital of Damascus, targeting various places including the Syrian TV and the Four Seasons Hotel where the UN weapons inspectors are residing. Russia criticized U.S. for its inability to bring Syrian opposition to Geneva II conference. And on the ground, the Syrian army is making gains in the battlefield, particularly south of the capital, recapturing the strategic town of Al-Bawada near Damascus. Well, tonight we're going to bring you another program on the tug of war in Syria. Stay with us. Welcome back. To help us to shed light on the latest development in Syria, we've joined by two guests. In the studio, I'm delighted to be joined by political analyst Dr. Mohammad Hassan Khani, who is also a professor of international relations at Imam Sadegh University in Tehran. Dr. Khani, thank you for taking part in our program, sir.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure, sir. And also via Skype from Toronto, Canada, we are pleased to be joined by analyst and scholar, Dr. Ahmed Al-Hashemi. Dr. Al-Hashemi, thank you for taking part in Center Stage, sir.
Mr. Sharafi, thank you for inviting me to tonight's shows at Sahar TV, and I must say, happy Eid al-Adha to you and to your viewers.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Happy Eid al-Adha to you and our Muslim viewers. We'll get into our discussion proper after this narration about a Human Rights Watch report on Takfiri militants killing innocent Syrian civilians in the west of the country in August. Stay with us.
Evidence that anti-Syria terrorist groups carried out the killings and the hostage-taking in their several-day operation that began around Alawit villages in Latakia on August 4th. The 105-page report was compiled based upon on-site investigation and interviews with 35 people, including the survivors of the attacks. According to the report, most of the killings apparently took place on the first day of the offensive. In some cases, the extremists executed or gunned down entire families. A vast majority of the hostages are also women and children. The human rights organization further said the acts of violence rise to the level of war crimes and crimes against humanity, calling on the UN Security Council to immediately take such cases to criminal court. The rights group also stressed that the scale and organization of the attacks on civilians suggest premeditation. The acting Middle East director at Human Rights Watch, Mr. Joe Stork, said this operation was a coordinated planned attack on the civilian population in these Alawit villages. The Human Rights Watch report also said over 20 militant groups took part in the operation, while many of the dead had been executed by Al-Qaeda-affiliated groups. Since the outbreak of the turmoil in Syria in March 2011, several video clips have been released showing the grisly crimes perpetrated by foreign-sponsored terrorists against innocent civilians in the country. According to the United Nations, more than 100,000 people have been killed and millions of others displaced in the tug of war in Syria.
Welcome back to Center Stage. Professor Khani, as if if we needed any evidence of Takfiri militants and terrorists committing such atrocities, such crimes on this scale. This Human Rights Watch said that hundreds were killed and taken hostage by Takfiri terrorists in August alone. Your thoughts on that?
Well, it's clear that they are committing such a crime, and this is not the first time that they are doing so. In the past also, we have reports which has confirmed by the United Nations agencies and independent observers that they have committed crimes and somehow massacres they committed. The question is that why the West is keeping silent to these atrocities.
Exactly.
Of course, there are media who are covering the issue, and sometimes we see occasionally that officials, Western officials, somehow prefer to not to cover the news as it is, but just briefly mentioning it in their reports. But the fact that they somehow are reluctant to accept and to condemn these issues somehow is one of the reasons that they are repeating this. So if we had a kind of very strong reaction from the Western countries and international organizations condemning these issues and saying that it's very likely that you will be brought to justice, maybe we will witness less and less of these very sad scenes.
Why, Professor Khani, why is the West approaching this issue so selectively and subjectively? Why aren't they condemning such massacres of innocent people? We're not talking about the Syrian army, we're talking about innocent Syrian people.
Yeah. Well, this is this goes back to a very, very important issue, which we call it double standards in the Western policies towards similar issues when it is related to a government which has friendly relationship with them. Well, they know how to deal with it.
Turn a blind eye.
Exactly. And when it comes to somehow a case in which it's going to serve their interests, they will magnify it or somehow bring it to the light. So in that sense, this is the double standard policy of the West, which somehow is doing damaging the image and the perceptions of the Western countries, not only in the Middle East, but across the globe.
Thank you, sir. Dr. Al-Hashim in Toronto, sir, how is the Syria's dismantling of its chemical weapons going to affect the balance of power as far as the regional dimensions of the conflict is concerned? Dr. Al-Hashimi in Canada, sir.
The issue of chemical weapons need to be looked at from two angles. One, as you inferred, it has been used by Syria as a deterrent, the same way the Zionist entity used its nukes as a deterrent for any external attack.
That's right.
That's one element when it has to do to the core question. But as you are aware, these chemical weapons are being provided by the big powers to these third world countries. We had a similar scenario in Iraq, if you disarm Saddam Hussein before the downfall of the regime in Baghdad in 2003. But as far as the technicalities are concerned, here we are dealing with some 18 sites which produce weaponries spread over the country. I don't know to what extent the UN mission can succeed in achieving the anticipated results in May of 2014. As you are aware, again, talking about technicalities,
that's right.
We have something in the chemical weaponry which is called just for the laymen who have difficulty to understand the chemical processes. If we call the chemical weapon product C, A plus B normally gives us P. The P is precursor, something which is one step before the production of the chemical weapon. After the producing of the chemical weapon, it is being mounted on the warhead in order to dispense them and what have you. What the president of the country said under the arrangement between regarding this, then Bashar al-Assad said, so has ready these weapons to any country which accepts to dismantle them and destruct them. When you talk about 1,000 ton of chemical weapons, you are talking about a monumental aspect, because you should not forget the NIMBY syndrome. NIMBY syndrome stands for not in my backyard.
That's right.
There is no country which accepts such highly toxic compounds to be put on its soil for incineration in high temperature furnaces. Leave alone the fact that the precursors will stay in the hand of the regime, because as you are aware, it is easy to put them on truck and move them abroad and keep them in. So briefly put, this has no monumental impact on the regional conflict, leaving alone the assurances the Russians gave to the Syrian regime.
That's right.
To convince the regime that, yes, let us do this within the frame of the UN resolutions.
Thank you. Professor Khani, Russia says Russia has stressed the need to stage the Geneva II conference on the Syrian conflict ASAP as soon as possible. Why this request? Why this demand by Moscow, sir?
One short comment on the previous question, and then I will come back to your next question. When we're talking about the impact of the dismantling of the Syrian chemical weapons in terms of the changing in balance of power, there are two different views, two opposite views. The first view says that, well, chemical weapons in the hands of any government will bring it some kind of power. I mean, you know,
deterrent power.
Traditionally, they says chemical weapons are the nukes of the poor. So in that sense, they argue that Syrian government is losing one of its cards and is losing its power by getting rid of the chemical weapons, especially when it comes to a kind of balance of power between Syria and Israel. But there are an opposite view saying that, well, chemical weapons, I mean, the era of using or maneuvering on chemical weapons has passed. So it's more a burden on the shoulders of any government who is holding them.
Rather than a winning card.
So in that sense, it's in the benefit of the Syrian government to get rid of them. So it will be psychologically, popular in the region and in the public opinion.
In the international public
domestically
opinion.
And international public opinion, saying that, okay, I've got rid of this, so there is no more excuse for them, for example, in case that any other use of chemical weapons, when there is no weapons in the hands of the government, clearly someone else has used it. So we have these two different views.
Right.
And now, coming back to your
Geneva II
question about
conference.
Geneva II, it seems that Russia is still pursuing a kind of what I call it, finding a multilateral solution to the Syrian conflict.
Right.
So holding an international conference is maybe the best way, the best highway towards finding a multilateral solution to the Syrian conflict, which Russia, Iran, and a number of other countries still believe that this is the sole solution. This is the only solution for the Syrian crisis. Well, in that sense, Moscow is trying to convince the West, and particularly the United States, that, okay, you have the obligation, because you have the influence of the opposition, you have the obligation to bring them on the negotiation table, and also convince other regional powers, including Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Turkey, that you must come to this conference helping and having your own contribution to finding a peaceful solution. This is the only way ahead if you are talking about finding a political solution. Otherwise, the war, there is no end and the horizon for this very, very tragic war.
Professor Khani, as you just said, sir, the Geneva II conference is seen by some analysts, including yourself, as the only chance to find a political solution to the Syrian crisis. Do you personally hold out much hope, even when it takes place, hopefully?
Well, I hope so, but it, to a great extent, it depends on the development on the ground. If one side or the other having some gains, which will overwhelmingly change the balance of power on the ground, they will be somehow not happy or not ready to participate. So if there is a stalemate and both sides somehow see their chance very limited to get to win on the ground, that would increase the chance that they choose to come to the negotiation table, and it seems that negotiation table is in Geneva.
Right, thank you. Dr. Al-Hashemi in Toronto, sir, your thoughts on this Geneva II conference on Syria, in view of the fact that Russia has sharply criticized the US for its inability to bring the Syrian opposition to the Geneva II conference on the crisis in Syria. Has the US the power or the desire to bring the opposition to the negotiating table, sir?
This question is directed to me, I understand, correct?
That's right, sir, that's right. Dr. Hashim in Toronto.
Yes, sorry for the interruption. Regarding your question about the willingness of the U.S. To bring the two parties or the opposition, the so-called Syrian opposition, to the negotiation table, Geneva II, I would submit that this process, i.e. finding a diplomatic solution which pleases every side.
Okay, we seem to...
Same way, we look at the Israeli conflict. We need to look at this Syrian conflict because of its international dimension. Not only the regional powers have various invested interests in this from the different camps, but also the big powers got involved. If you recall, a few weeks ago, Mr. Obama was so determined to use the military or what I call gun diplomacy in order to bring about a regime change in Syria, when stood up and said to the American that hitting Damascus, it means that you are hitting Moscow, and this is a red line. Of course, the Americans took note, and as recent a few days ago, John Kerry of the U.S. State Department, when he met Al-Akhdar al-Ibrahimi, who will be resuming his activities under the charter of the U.N., to revive this Syrian solution for the Syrian crisis, he said to Mr. Al-Ibrahimi that, yes, America cannot approach to this solution, i.e. by simply arming the so-called Syrian opposition. The other side of the matter, as you are aware, these meetings, be it in Geneva 2 or Geneva X, other number of meetings will be held in the future. You see, the meeting has to have an agenda which has a substance, but with certainties, the regime there in Damascus is saying that the so-called opposition are nothing but missionaries. Missionaries have no contact in Syria. They cannot move, you see, anything within the Syria, Syrian border. On the other hand, the so-called opposition is saying that the regime is not legitimate, is at the helm of power. Okay. We are not coming. Bringing these two differing parties to meet and discuss something of substance is a big issue.
Okay. So, thank you, Dr. Hashim.
As you indicated in your question, Russia is trying to put the American administration under test.
Okay, thank you. Professor Khani, as far as you know, has the Syria opposition ever evinced any interest, any readiness, or the ability to negotiate to a diplomatic solution in the Syrian crisis?
Well, when we are talking about the opposition, Syrian oppositions, it's very important to bear in mind that we are not talking about a united front. Mm-hmm. There are so many branches and so many factions within the oppositions. So we are not talking about a united voice and united policy and united strategy.
How difficult does this make the actual opposition to have a representation?
This is a challenge. This is a challenge. And the reason that the United States and the West are skeptical of how to deal with opposition is the fact that they have started to recognize this reality, mm-hmm. that opposition is not a united front. And there are some very radical, very dangerous radicals among the oppositions, Wahhabis, Salafis, Takfiris, whose presence would be a nightmare for the West and the United States and even Israel. So in that sense, they really don't know who they are going to support. And just in case that Bashar Assad regime is, for example, toppling, so who will be in charge in Damascus and how they are going to deal with that power? And will there be a vacuum of power? So these are uncertainties that makes the Americans and the Western countries to be thoughtful and skeptical of how to deal with the opposition. But again, talking about this variety of factions within the oppositions, yet they are not ready to send a representative to the Geneva conference. So in that sense, that by itself is one of the problems that oppositions of the Syrian government are facing. Who is going to represent the opposition, and what will be the fate of such a conference if they participate?
Thank you, sir. Dr. Al-Hashim in Toronto, sir. Why the attacks against the UN weapons inspectors? This week we witnessed a bomb attack, mortar attack on the Four Seasons Hotel. Why this deliberate attempt to undermine, in a sense, sabotage this international diplomatic effort?
This question of yours have a strong relevance with the previous one. Sabotaging the UN efforts means that prolonging the process of finding a solution and keeping the status quo in such a way as if it is a continued crisis. Mm-hmm. As you indicated in the introduction, this Syrian crisis started in March of 2011.
That's right.
Now we are more than 30 months away. Had the international community, or specifically the UN, had functional offices, this crisis could have been confined without reaching to the status of a direct confrontation or conflict of interest between the Americans and the Russian, and then the Chinese and Iran as a regional power come into the picture. But unfortunately, because of the fact that the UN office is being hijacked by the U.S., between brackets, you remember Paulin Cowell, the U.S. Secretary of State, who presented a bunch of lies based on the finding of Mr. Marashi. He is an Arab-Iranian student at Berkeley University. The U.S. Secretary of UC State takes the finding of an MS student and presenting it to the UN to deceive the world about the non-existent weapons of mass destruction in Baghdad, in Iraq. This fact is being highlighted by Bashar al-Assad recently in an interview with, if I recall, RT. The fact indicates that, no, the UN and the international body has no genuine interest to go and find a quick solution for such crises. So I am afraid that the anticipation of 4 million displaced Syrian in the coming year and all the, those things will be manifested, although the UN present these facts in order to show the magnitude of the human suffering. But, of course, this has to do with the political willingness of the parties and to what extent, for example, Al-Akhdar al-Ibrahimi will be successful in finding a solution after this truce, which has been accepted in the year 2013, but it was not accepted in the year 2011. I remember I commented on the same issue 2 years ago when I was interviewed by your colleague, Mr. Bijani. So let us hope that the new realities, especially the weak American economy, mm-hmm. and the fact that the American interest is being unjustifiably geared with the Zionist entities' interest in the region, will be become known to the international community, and more forces will be coming to the Russian, Chinese, Iran camp, so to bring peace and stability to the region.
Thank you, Dr. Al-Hashemi. Professor Khani, once again it seems that the West's toxic lies have become exposed only weeks after the Western narrative of Bashar al-Assad government having used, or claiming to have used chemical weapons on August 21st. We're seeing this narrative coming apart at the seams. Has this somehow diminished the chances of an all-out attack on Syria by the West?
For the time being, yes. It seems that, well, accepting the dismantling of the chemical weapons of the Syrian government put it in a safe place. So for the time being, we do not see any indication that the West and the United States are going to intervene militarily and attack mm-hmm. directly Syria. But it's not for sure, and it's not for the long term. It depends, again, what's going to happen on the ground. You know, one of the most important obstacles for reaching to a peaceful solution or finding a peaceful solution for the Syrian crisis, in my view, in my very personal view, is the fact that the other side, the oppositions, and the supporters of the opposition. That includes United States, the West, and the regional countries, Qatar, Turkey, Saudi Arabia,
Jordan.
What they want and the desirable solution is a total victory. Total victory means removing Bashar Assad from power. So that explains that why they are not happy kind of mediation with by United Nations.
And they won't settle for anything else.
Exactly.
Anything less.
Why they do not welcome the initiatives by Russia or Iran? Because what they basically want is just wiping out the other player, which is the central government in Syria.
Isn't that wishful thinking on their part?
It is wishful. It seems to be wishful so far. But I mean, this is the big problem, the big obstacles that doesn't allow any political solution going forward. One more comment as we come to the end of the program. Again, I mean, why these things happened? I mean, to finding the roots and causes of these tragic event in Syria, which has somehow took so many lives, precious lives of human beings.
And millions of people displaced.
Exactly.
And they are suffering.
There are so many reasons for that. Of course, the failure of the government to somehow represent kind of participation that the people are appealing. The failure of the regional players who play a responsible role. Mm-hmm. But one of the most important reasons, in my view, is the miscalculation by some certain powers, West, United States, and again the regional powers, these mm-hmm. three countries, Qatar, Turkey, and Saudi Arabia, the huge miscalculation that they had. In their view, it was somehow a matter of weeks or months at most.
At most, that's
to
right.
bring Bashar Assad down from power. So by this mentality and by this assumption, they embarked on igniting the crisis in Syria and supporting the opposition. Now we are 30 months away and there is no somehow solution or no even finding, not the central government is still there, Bashar Assad has not been overthrown and there is no solution to that. So that miscalculation had consequences and it seems that Syrian people are paying the price for that consequence.
Thank you, sir. Dr. Al-Hashim in Toronto says, time is quickly running out, sir. Some say that the support given by certain regional countries, for example, Turkey, to regional, to insurgents in Syria is going to backfire on the very countries, sir. How far do you agree with this assertion, Dr. Al-Hashim in Toronto?
I surely agree with that because the gross mistake the Turkish foreign minister conceived was Syria is another Libya. After the failure to get the NATO to do the dirty job, because you know Turkey is a member of the NATO and is dying to get close to the Western powers.
European Union.
But unfortunately, forgetting that they have a long border with Syria, they have the shared Kurdish problem with Syria. Of course, this will have this severe ramification on the government because the Turks will come and realize one day they were the masters during the Ottoman Empire, and now because of their fly in the orbit of Washington, they have to accept the ramification of these wrong policies as being indicated above.
Thank you, Dr. Al-Hashimi. Professor Khani, we have 2 minutes left, less than 2 minutes. Your thoughts to wrap up the program, particularly on the same question.
The last question, yeah. You know, there are those who, in my view, rightly compared the Syrian situation with Afghanistan during the Soviet occupation. At that time, Afghanistan was the safe haven for the jihadists.
That's right.
And the Western governments and Americans and regional governments, they supported
funded them,
Mujahideen, funded them. And then at the end of the crisis, somehow the fallout was beyond the borders of Afghanistan.
The genie was let out of the bottle.
And they couldn't control it. It seems that the same thing is happening in Syria now. Mm-hmm. Syria is now is the safe haven for most extremist, most dangerous groups in the Middle East and the Islamic world. Mm-hmm. They have gathered there from different nationalities, and there is this fear that what will happen the day after the end of the crisis in Syria, where they are going to somehow go. So in that sense, there are those who say they will spread throughout the region, they will return to their own countries, and maybe they go to the Western capitals, and that would be the beginning of a very, very serious crisis for the countries in the region, and even the Western capitals.
So, is this a worrying question for the officials in the Western capitals, that will they be able to contain these trained terrorists coming back to their countries?
You know, because what we have at stake is so high that it's worth thinking about it. So that seems to be a valid scenario. And in that sense, I mean, it requires the wisdom of the responsible political leaders within the region and beyond the region to find a political solution for this tragedy. And it seems that the gradual transfer of power will be maybe the most viable solution to this issue, and I hope that could somehow work.
Inshallah. Thank you. Well, that's all the time we have for this edition of Center Stage. I'd like to, before we go, thank my top guests for their time and insight. We were joined on the Skype earlier and then on the phone from Toronto, Canada, by analyst and scholar Dr. Ahmed Al-Hashemi. Dr. Hashemi, it was a pleasure to have you join our program, sir. Thank you for taking part.
Thank you for inviting me.
It was a pleasure. And also in our Tehran studio, we had a political analyst, Dr. Mohammad Hassan Khani, professor of international relations at Imam Sadegh University in Tehran. Professor Khani, as always, it was a pleasure to have you join our program, sir.
The pleasure is mine.
Thank you. And I'd like to thank our viewers for staying tuned. Until next week, from me, our guest today, and the rest of the team, it's goodbye. Hope to see you same place, same time, same channel next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you, sir.